programming, no change of plans. Welcome to the second hour. I am Jim Rome. So Kenny Moore the second was going to join me at the top of this hour, but he is moving to 11:40, which means you can call right now because we are still open and open until 40 past. Welcome back. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. So sometimes when you think there's going to be an interview, you hang up, you don't want to wait through it. There is no interview right now. You can call 1-800-636-8686. We missed hour number one. We talked about the City of Champions. Yes, like it or not, it is Los Angeles, the City of Champions. Don't take my word for it. Take the word of Aaron Rodgers. He tweeted as much. Max Homa, that's the tweet. Hashtag City of Champions. I talked about Max's win. And I took it back to an interview that he had, or we had with him in 2019. And to see him survive missing that putt on 18, a birdie putt from 3 feet, that would have won him that event. I thought to myself, man, I hate that for that guy because I love that guy. And as tough as that guy is, I'm not sure you come back from that. Not if you give Tony Finau another shot. Yet Max somehow gets it done. We hit on that in hour number one. I talked about the Mariners. Anytime I talk about the Mariners, it goes badly for the Mariners. If I'm talking about the Mariners, there's a reason I'm talking about the Mariners, and it's never good. Got a phone call from somebody in Wisconsin who told me they were driving out north near where we have a home, and did I need for him to check on my pipes? Because, quote, Rome, if your pipes burst, that's not a good thing. And it's really cold here.
Not good.
It was Joe. Hawk, where are you? Joel. Hawk told me his name was Joel, and he corrected me and said his name was Joe. Alvy, isn't that how that went? Wake up, Bird. It's good to have you, Joel. What's up? How are you?
Good, Jim. Actually, it's Joe, J-O-E, but that's okay.
Here you go, Hawk. Jared in Wisconsin wants to weigh in. Quote, where was Joe when we needed help cleaning out the boathouse? Signed, Jake. Good point. Very, very good point. We do have a boathouse. And there's a lot of bird crap in that boathouse, except it's not really bird crap. It's bat crap. There are bats in that birdhouse or boathouse. And again, I didn't know this about the boathouse, but boathouses are a thing. You cannot build them at this point. So you have to have it grandfathered in, or there's like some crazy process. So we bought this house, we knocked this house down, we rebuilt a new house, and we didn't touch the boathouse. If we knocked the house down, you can imagine maybe we wanted to upgrade. The boathouse was in probably even worse shape. So really, that's true. My man, my pipes are fine, but if you want to go by and slap a coat of paint on that boathouse, I might be open to it. Just make sure you match the paint on the house. Hey, Jim, the reason Wisconsin neighbors will fix each other's houses and you don't know your Californian neighbors' names is because people in Wisconsin have nothing better to do. Those fat asses are probably only helping their neighbors because they expect food in return. Tommy from NC. Unwar type 2 diabetes. All right. I don't want to turn this show into that, but I can't let crap like that slide. That's not what that is. All right. They're not doing it for food. They don't show up with a sign that says, we'll work for food. In fact, these people aren't even Wisconsinites. Most of them are from Chicago. Almost everybody on our street, and I don't know too much about that street yet because we've only spent one summer there. But most of the people are from Chicago, and they're not hungry. They have food. Their refrigerators are stocked. They're not doing it in the hopes of getting a free meal. And they're not from Wisconsin. And they're not fat asses. And they're not looking for anything in return, much less food. Nobody knocked on my door and said, hey, I see that you got a couple of trees down. We'll saw those things up, chop it up into wood, stack the wood for you in exchange for a hamburger. Hey, that didn't happen. Hey. Like I said, I've never seen anything like it. I think that why it's happening is not because they're hungry, but because they're good people. And that's just what they do. Anybody else? All right, so let's talk some basketball. We've got an open segment right here. We're going to have Kenny Moore the second, but he's moving to hour number three. So before the start of the NBA season, I felt pretty strongly that it was the Lakers and everybody else. Not only were the defending champs the team to beat, but I felt like they had widened the gap between themselves and everybody else because they had a really effective offseason. In other words, they had the potential to get better. There was no offseason for Rob Pelinka. He went to work on a few roster deficiencies that they had. He addressed them, and they did get better. They got better when they added Dennis Schroeder, Marcus Gasol, Wes Matthews. They ripped Trez Harrell out of the Clippers locker room. So the team that won it all got even better. And I still think this Lakers squad has got the same potential. Of course, pending Anthony Davis's health. If he's right, my take has not changed. If they get him back and he's right, and they don't burn out LeBron in the process, having him play extra minutes to keep this thing afloat, then they're still the team to beat. That hasn't changed. What has changed, though, in my mind, relates to the gap between the Lakers and the next best team in the NBA. What I'm saying is they do have competition now. And no, it's not from the team that shares the same crib with them here in L.A. It's from the team that beat the Clippers last night, 112-108. And yes, I'm saying it. The Lakers are going to have to pack their lunch come time for the finals because it's going to be some work. They're going to need to work to beat the Brooklyn Nets. And they're big three. The Nets are title contenders. I would not have been willing to say that necessarily when the season started. I'm saying it right now. They are title contenders, whether you want to admit it or not. Yes, I did have concerns when they acquired James Harden. Yes, I did voice those concerns when they got Harden. But they've quickly proven that they are absolutely legit. I mean, like, there's offensive juggernauts, and then there's this crew. And this West Coast swim just proved exactly that. I'm well aware also of the fact that Kevin Durant has not played of late. I just don't care. You add a generational scorer who doesn't dominate the ball, and that's going to make that team a bleeping Voltron. Not take that away from them. Steve Nash has the big three in their best possible roles, and the role players, the guys surrounding the big three, are better than y'all think. Last night against the Clippers, without KD, Harden and Kyrie did exactly what they've been doing of late, balling. And the guys around them did their jobs as well, and they grind out that dub. I mean, the Nets were easily in control heading into the fourth, up by as many as 15. And while it looked like they were going to run the Clippers out of the gym, PG and Kawhi had other plans. Then all of a sudden, you've got yourself a game. So credit to the Clippers for hanging in. They're still chippy as hell. Even George. In fact, especially George. He's following up that horrid playoff run where he got lost, pandemic P, with some of his best ball to date. And in the fourth quarter last night, he was in full PG-13 mode once again. He scored 12 in under 5 minutes. He sparked a rally that cut their 15-point deficit down to 6 with only 3 minutes to play. It looked like they might rip that game. But this being just his second game back from a toe injury that had cost him 7 games, Ty Lue ripped him from the game after he had logged 32 minutes. Remember, Friday night, when he played his first game back after the injury, he played 27 minutes and said that he was not ready to play 30. So, last night, he finished the last 250 on the bench. Hey, listen, I mean, as a sidebar, I agree 100% with a player's safety always being the first priority. Obviously, that's what the Clippers did here with George. I get it. You got to take care of that guy. You got to manage his minutes. He's coming off that injury. But I also agree 100% with fans who are annoyed by that. I mean, think about it. Most fans are turning into the NBA nowadays and not seeing a team's best product. In fact, the truth is with the association, now that it's out of the bubble, you never know what you're going to get night to night. You never know who's going to play night to night. You're not getting the best product night to night. And then you see a matchup like that, and the Nets look like they're going to run out of the gym, and the Clippers hang in, and it looks like they have a chance to rip it only to have a guy who's on fire on the bench. So that's not the best thing, obviously. The Clippers have their two horses out there in Kawhi and Paul George, and then he gets yanked with the game on the line. That's a pretty tough sell right now to the fans and to gamblers like the Big Head. Anyway, I digress. PG had to finish the game on the Pine. He had a front row seat for Kawhi, trying to tie that game with under 10 seconds to play when this happened.
Leonard drives, goes inside, lays it up, and an offensive foul is called.
An offensive foul in that situation. Yeah, I'd say that's pretty questionable. I could even argue that that was a bad call. Harden seemed to initiate the contact. And to me, personally, that's a clear playthrough. Couple of strong dudes, couple of studs, battling. Late in the game, nothing more. But the refs made that call. And then the Nets finished with another dub, and that's six in a row for them. And speaking of Paul George, you knew he'd have some thoughts on that Kawhi call and the overall officiating. Remember, 3 weeks back, after losing to the Nets the first time, George was not happy with the refs. And last night, he hammered that same point home.
I haven't really got into the flopping game, but in today's game, it's smart. You know what I mean? It's smart. They control the refs. You know, they got the refs in their pocket. So, you know, kudos to the guys that are great at that part of the game.
Yeah, somehow I don't think that's what he meant. They've got the refs in their pocket. They control the refs. Kudos to those gutless floppers who are great at being gutless floppers. Yeah, I don't know, Pandemic. I don't think the reason you lost was due to the refs and your perceived star treatment towards Brooklyn. Nothing like a dude who is a star and plays with another superstar in Kawhi Leonard complaining about somebody else getting star treatment. And if I'm George, the last thing I'd be doing right about now is complaining about what calls the guys in Brooklyn are getting. I'd be way more concerned about the actual guys in Brooklyn. As in, you just lost to two of the stars, and the third, who some consider the best player in basketball when healthy, didn't even play. I'd be a lot more concerned about that. A lot more worried about that than the way the officials called that game in the end. Because no ref is going to close that gap between them and your team right now, Paul. Brooklyn is just better than you right now. And if I'm everybody else in the association, I'd be way more concerned about that than the way the officials are calling their games. Look, they're not without deficiencies. Except those deficiencies are not as big as we thought they might be. I mean, sure, their defense is not great. But I would say their rebounding would be more of a concern for me. But don't forget, they've got time to correct that. And they're getting better. And the trade deadline's coming up. And they've got, for instance, Spencer Dinwiddie and his contract that they could easily move. He's injured now, but he is a nice player. He's only 27, and the team acquiring him gets the bird rights, which would be pretty attractive for any team getting him. And then you've got the buyout market. We all know everybody wants to jump on with a contender, and that's exactly what these Nets are. So, Laker fan, I would not take your car flags down yet. No need to panic yet. But make this very clear. I'm not saying that Brooklyn's better. I'm saying they're coming pretty fast, and they're closing the gap, and they're legit. And they are going to get better. How much better remains to be seen. We'll see what they do in the buyout market or the trade deadline, but they are getting better. And what I'm saying to you, Laker fan, you better hope that AD is healthy when the time comes, and you better have your A game come finals time. Because it says here, there is a collision course waiting now between the Nets and the Lakers and the Nets. Voltran offense is coming. Ice up, AD.
Ice up, son.
Ice up, AD.
AD, what's good, baby?
I was not buying earlier this season. I am now. Man, they are legit. And they're getting better. Much better. Dear Jim, we don't see anything wrong with Kevin Mather using the word tummy. Signed, guys who call dinner supper.
Seen my big tummy out there in left field.
He didn't just say tummy. He said my big tummy.
Seen my big tummy out there in left
field. Big dummy. James in Tucson. Hey, Rome. If your pipes burst in Eagle River, give me a call. I can help you determine the cause. Regards, Louis Slungpu.
Louis Slungpu. I hope I pronounced the last name correctly.
Yes, ma'am. It's Slungpu.
Oh, thank you very much. What can you tell us
about
this?
Stop right there, Alvin.
Is it something you've ever seen before?
You knew right then and there that was going to come off the rails, right? Not only is it a guy named Louis Slungpu.
Louis Slungpu.
She mispronounced his name, and he corrected her to Slungpu. At that point, How could this go anything other than horribly for her?
Like that?
You know, we had a pressure break around sunset, and the cherry bomb must have popped through the top of the pipe and just blew the bottom right out of it.
Wait, is this something that happens because of the UCLA campus and kids playing around, or is it the high school campus, or do you know the source?
Right now, we're still in the investigation phase. It just seems that the break might have come somewhere around the Poly Pavilion area, one of the locker rooms. It was either a cherry bomb or someone took a really large dump, you know?
That is an incredible... So are you 100% sure about that?
That's a fake call.
Oh, we lost him. I'm sorry about that. We hope to get him back and find out how they're going
to... She held that like a pro, whoever she is. I'll tell you who the pro is. Slung Poo. My man delivered that deadpan. You want to talk about a method actor? My man delivered those lines beautifully. Didn't change expression. You know, didn't act like a kid and start laughing. He just very scientifically and tactically delivered that. Took his time, set it up perfectly, and then said, yeah, it was either a cherry bomb or somebody took a gigantic dump. And her response literally was, that's fascinating. All right, so let's get into this. Meanwhile, dude next to her at the desk is like, no, that's fake. That's fake. That's a prank call. And then she immediately is confused. I guess we lost him. Yeah, something like that. Whoever you are. Tell you what, those things are forever. One bad day at work, if you're me or her, and believe that, those things are forever. That's never going away. Slung Poo's never going away, nor is her reaction to Slung Poo. Why? Because you clones won't leave it alone. Hey, Ron.
Yes, ma'am. It's Slung Poo.
Sorry about that, Lou. Sorry we got your name wrong, Lou. Lou Slung Poo. Good old, I'd love to know that guy. That guy's, it has to have worked its way back to him that he is now a legend to five or six of you clones. Louis Slung Poo.
Louis Slung Poo?
He's a legend to five or six of you clones and James Kelly, who if he keeps it up will soon be a clone. This says, good old Seattle Mariners. It doesn't matter what year it is. The Mariners figure out new ways to disappoint their fans. All of this BS with Mather highlights the fact that the Mariners do not care about winning. They started in 1977 and have exactly four playoff appearances and zero since 01. Now their president of baseball operations is publicly saying they have no interest in bringing up their most talented prospects during a rebuild. War baseball fan in a dead baseball town. Steven Silver. Man, you know it's bad when guys just give me their governments or their near governments. It's not even like Steven Seattle. It's like this guy wants to go on record with it. Steven Silver. Hey, Rome, make sure you put my name on that. Make sure they know it's me, Rome. If you need my address and my digits, I'll give that to you too. I want them to know how pissed we are and how embarrassing it is to be a Mariners fan. Sincerely, Steven Silver. All right, when we return, I've got Rick Barnes coming up at 40 past. How about a guy hitting two grand slams in one inning? That story, too. Is your check engine light on? That's a drag, right? Don't ignore that. If it's on, it's probably on for a reason, and it's probably not just the sensors out. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Let their professional parts people scan your car for free. They will retrieve the codes. They'll discuss possible solutions. They'll even help you find a professional technician if necessary. They'll help you find a reputable repair facility or service center nearby. Or maybe you need new wiper blades. The professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your car. They will even install your wiper blades free of charge. And since it is O Rewards Bonus Points Month, at O'Reilly Auto Parts, you can earn up to 3x points on your purchase. So you want to stop in today for store-wide savings on select items throughout the entire store and online both. And remember, you can collect 150 points and get a $5 reward. If you're not an O Rewards member yet, you can sign up today at O'ReillyAuto.com or at any O'Reilly Auto Parts store. It's fast. It's easy. It's for free. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Probably wondering what were we going to do without football. It's all good. It's never quite as good without the NFL, but it's still all good. A lot of golf and, of course, March Madness right around the corner. This weekend, CBS has got a couple of full days of college basketball triple headers, actually. The action gets underway on Saturday at noon Eastern. You've got a battle in the Big 12 between Texas and Texas Tech. My man, Chris Beard. Then Sunday, three more games capped off with a late afternoon Big Ten showdown. Iowa taking on Ohio State. Two College Hoops triple headers on Saturday and Sunday, getting underway at noon Eastern and 9 Pacific. The road to the Final Four, of course, is on CBS. Double triple headers. So that's something to talk about. Already hit on the Genesis and some golf. How about this? How was your weekend? Did you get it into anything interesting? No matter how good it was, I guarantee it wasn't better than the weekend that Derek Lewis and Oscar Valdez both had. And on the flip side of that, no matter how bad it was, I guarantee your weekend was not as bad as the weekend that Curtis Blades and Michael Burchelt had. What I'm saying is this. Y'all want to see a dead body? Actually, y'all want to see two dead bodies. Why don't we start with Lewis, Blades, and the UFC, because that was a sneaky big fight and a blatantly obvious huge knockout. Now, what's interesting about this one is Blades went into that fight as a massive favorite, and for good reason. He was the number two heavyweight contender. He had won four straight. He had not lost since 2018. And he had the most takedowns in UFC heavyweight history, so the game plan was pretty obvious, right? He was going up against Derek Lewis, the underdog. Get Lewis down, wrestle him, walk out with a pocket full of cash, and a good look at a title shot in the near future. Pretty basic. Simple, but not easy. Simple, but not easy. And there's one piece of advice here. Do not let Lewis break out his sledgehammer and smash you in the face with it. Unfortunately, Blades did not do the first, and most definitely had the second happen. He was sharp in the first round. He went after Lewis's legs with kicks, but he never actually took the fight to the ground. At that point, Lewis knew something really good was going to happen for him and something really bad for Blades.
Like at the end of the first round, I'm like, he's messing up. That's what I was saying in my head. And I'm like, all right, keep playing that game. That's what I was saying to myself.
He was right, too. He's messing up. Keep playing that game. And then came that second round. And then just over a minute into that round, Derek Lewis did what Derek Lewis does if you afford him an opportunity.
These guys have been on each other's radar. Do you believe it? Derek Lewis with the knockout. He's got a dozen, tied for the most in UFC history. None bigger than knocking out number two in Vegas tonight.
Holy crap. I don't know if you've seen that yet. You heard it, but I don't know if you've seen that. That was not a punch as much as that was a detonation. Blades was out before he hit the canvas. And not just out. Like, I thought that he had left not only the building, but the entire planet. Run that back again, because that wasn't just the biggest knockout in a long time. That was the biggest upset in the UFC since 2016. That's how heavy a favorite Blades was and how huge that shot was.
These guys have been on each other's radar. Do you believe it? Derek Lewis with the knockout. He's got a dozen, tied for the most in UFC history.
And I've watched that about a dozen times. And every time I see that, I think this guy's gone. And by gone, I mean dead. Like, my man was already debriefing with his maker before the ref could step in and stop it. Like, Lewis effectively just had that one slug in the chamber. And it was just a matter of when he was going to squeeze the trigger. Quote, "That was the only punch I was waiting for the entire night. I knew he was going to come in. That's all I was waiting for. I wasn't worried about throwing a 1-2, a jab, or anything. End quote. Oh, no, there was no jab. But there was a 1-2. There was a combo. Lewis hitting Blades and Blades hitting the floor. And I'm not sure what was worse, that vicious uppercut or the extra shots that Lewis landed when his opponent was already starched. Just because Blades was damn near dead didn't mean that fight was over or that Lewis was done throwing punches, because referee Herb Dean, who generally does a really good job, did not stop that fight when Blades hit the mat. And Lewis did not stop throwing punches either. Like, in short, this guy pounced on that corpse and was still landing shots. Kill shots. In other words, if Blades were not actually dead, he might be in a moment or two. Lewis didn't need to keep throwing because that fight was already over. Like I said, I thought that Blades' life may have already been over. But that's all immaterial to Lewis. Pulling back is not that dude's deal. I mean, trust me when I say, when he landed that shot, he knew there was no way anybody was going to wake up from that shot. But that's not his deal. He's not stopping until the ref pulls him off the dude that he just eviscerated.
I can't just turn the switch off just like that. I know some fighters could do that, but I can't do that. I got to wait until the referee pulls you off him, because you never know what happens. Anything could happen. He could turn into Stone Undertaker and sit straight up and eat all those shots. So you never know. We got to keep going to the referee, say, hey, chill out.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, D. And I love that clip of The Undertaker as much as the next guy, but that just was not happening. I mean, I guess anything is possible. Anything except dude waking up from that shot. There's absolutely no way that corpse was going to reanimate after eating that gigantic shot and then those subsequent shots and then jump up. But credit to playing to the whistle. I just wonder where the ref was on the chill out call. I mean, did he really think that zombie Curtis Blades was going to get up and get back in that fight? Because I can pretty much guarantee you that he was not. He absolutely was not. That was vicious. Like, very Masvidal v. Askren. Hashtag super necessary after that ice job. You guys see the video. It's incredible. Like he said, Derek said it. There are some guys who would pull back. Not me. Not until the ref says, chill out. I think Herb was running in there like, yo, chill out. My man's already dead. Thankfully, he wasn't. But I would not have been surprised, because that was a kill shot. And if that wasn't, the subsequent punches that he landed when dude was out would have been. Let me take a short time out. There was another incredible knockout over the weekend that I want to get to as well. But on the other side of this, we have an interview. In fact, I've got back-to-back interviews, starting with the head basketball coach at Tennessee, Rick Barnes. That is coming up next. Top of the hour, I've got KJ Wright. Right now, I've got a sports update for you. Here is the very latest on this Monday.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I am Jim Rome. Quick reminder, not all beef jerky is the same. Old Trapper is better for you and higher in essential protein than chips, sugar-filled energy bars, or candy. Make sure you ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? We are joined right now by the head basketball coach at Tennessee. Sixth season with the Volunteers. He was the 2019 Naismith College Coach of the Year, a six-time Conference Coach of the Year. Tennessee is currently 15-6 overall. They're number 25 in the AP poll. They're at Vanderbilt on Wednesday night. My guest is Rick Barnes. Rick, it's been a minute or two since we last spoke. How are you doing? How is your life right now, Rick?
Hey, Jim. Good to hear your voice. You know, we're doing fine. It's been a year, I think, we've all kind of gone through where it's been up and down and a lot of uncertainty, and right now with our team, you know, we've been very inconsistent the last couple of weeks, and you expect a little bit of that early in the year, but not this time of year, but the whole year has been inconsistent. Overall, you know, these guys have worked hard and tried to work through all the different issues we've had to deal with this year, and just need to finish strong.
It's good to hear your voice too, Rick. Rick Barnes joining us. All right, so why don't we jump right into that? You dropped a tough one, Rick, to Kentucky on Saturday. How do you go about processing that particular loss and then getting ready for Vandy on Wednesday?
Well, you know, the difference in the game here and there, Josiah James played a big role in the, in our win up there. You know, he had a double-double up there, and we didn't have him in the game here, which kept us from maybe spreading out a little bit more than we were able to do Saturday. And Kentucky shot the ball well in the first half. They really shot it well, and we didn't really have a great shooting game at all. And I thought we started pressing. You know, we have two young guys that, you know, have been spectacular at times, and they've struggled at times. And they had 50 points against Kentucky up there. They didn't fare so well this week. We knew Kentucky would do exactly what they did, crowd the floor, not to give those guys a chance to play one-on-one like we were able to do up there with them. And I just thought we got anxious as a team, and when shots weren't going in, we just kind of got away from what we needed to do. And our inside game, our post game that you need to have on days when you're not making perimeter shots, it just wasn't there.
Rick Barnes joining us. Rick, I wanted to ask about those two young guys that you referenced. Why don't we start with Jaden Springer? He arrived, for those who don't know, as a freshman as part of a class that generated a lot of buzz. And in four of his last five games, he's put up 23 points, 30 points, 21, and 16. So what do you make of the way he has shown up as a freshman?
Jim, you know, it's interesting with Jaden, and Keon was falling into this too. You know, and I think any young player this year, freshman for the most part, they've had as much a difficult year to get settled into college basketball as, because they didn't have the full summer, the full fall, the way you like to have with them. And Jaden fought some injuries in the fall, and so he really, really didn't get himself going to where he needed to be from a conditioning standpoint until somewhere in the middle of January, really. And nothing that he could do other than go as hard, and he was going as hard as he possibly could. But, you know, we also, because of the COVID shutdowns and stops and starts, it affected the young guys so much more than it did the older guys, as you would expect. I mean, the older guys have been through it before and could pick up things and move on quicker. But I'm sure we're not the only team that's dealt with those stops and starts, and you felt like almost every time you're doing the same thing as a team, and with young players you couldn't move as far as quickly ahead as you wanted to, trying to keep them up to speed where they needed to be. And there's a lot we didn't get to put in this year. We haven't been able to, just because of where we are with our starts and stops.
Sure. Rick Barnes joining us. All right, so we talked about Jaden Springer. You mentioned Keon Johnson. So what you have, though, you've got some good young players, Rick, and you've got some coming in as well. In fact, there's a father of a player who's coming next year who said a big part of the reason that his son chose Tennessee was because of your history of developing players. You know, guys like Jordan Bone, P.J. Tucker, and the like. I'm curious, when you're looking for guys that you think might fit what you're trying to do, exactly what are you looking for? What kind of a player fits best with what you're trying to do there?
The guys, Jim, that fit best in ours, it's the guys that have that DNA where they are just eaten up with wanting to get better. Where they, you know, a lot, I think most people you talk to, they think their kids work hard. And I think kids in general think they work really hard. They don't really know what it is. They just don't truly understand what that next level work is about. And even from here to the next level is even more so. But we want those guys that are already they, and that's why during the recruiting process we are brutally honest with how we go about things, and we want those guys that say, hey, I want it, I want to come in, I want to work, I want to be the best I can be. And guys that really buy into that are the ones that have the success here.
You know, I would imagine, Rick, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that P.J. Tucker, I know for a fact now, obviously he knows how to work. He understands this concept of next level hard work. He wrote, though, and this is a big P.J. Tucker house. I love the guy. He said, quote, I came with the hunger, but you showed me how to fine tune it to become a beast. How did you go about fine tuning that hunger with him and helping him maximize his potential? What was your time like with him?
Well, you know, Jim, when you think about P.J. Tucker, you know, he grew up in North Carolina, right, you know, Raleigh area, and was not recruited by any ACC school. And you got four of them there that were in a, you know, they could touch him as much as they wanted to, and wasn't being recruited. I think maybe UNC Wilmington might have been recruiting him. And Frank Hay from North Carolina, and he had told me about him. My college roommate was still coaching at Lenoir Ryan where I went to school. And I called John, and I asked him, I said, tell me about P.J. Tucker. He said, all I can tell you is everybody says he's overweight, he's not tall enough, He says, all I can tell you, he always wins. He always wins. He said, I don't care who he's playing against in this state. The best players that are all these, you know, great players, suppose he always wins. And when he came, his very first workout at Texas, he couldn't make it. I mean, he really, first individual workout, he literally was on the side of the floor. He had thrown up in a garbage can. He was laying there, and he called his mom and said to his mom, Mom, I can't do this. Said, I thought I could. I can't. And the next day, first of all, we found out the reason being he had not eaten all day. He, you know, really on his own for the first time going to classes, hadn't eaten. And the next day, Jim, he came in, and it's like somebody had totally flipped the switch. He got going. And the one thing you realized early about him, one of the most fierce competitors you've ever could be around. And I told him, we were talking a year or so ago, I'd read an article where he had made up his mind when he was overseas playing, you know, I think he was spent 6-7 years over there. And he came out at a time when the NBA was just changing over. That, think about that team that won that championship, I think, the year he came out. Tim Duncan, Robert Horry, and David Robson was a typical front line in that league. And when PJ came out, you know, he was player of the year. I used to get on him. I said, you got to work on your perimeter jump shot. And he would say to me, Coach, I don't need to shoot a jump shot. I can score on anybody inside, which he could. I mean, that was no joke about that. But he didn't make it. And he went overseas, and I'd read an article where he said he really wishes, you know, he had given up on coming back to the NBA. And I told him, I said, PJ, that's a lie. You never gave up on wanting to come back here. And then as the game changed and he came back, a guy, and people have no idea how, I mean, he was an amazing scorer in college, especially around the rim, which that game up there now is different than it was then in college, obviously, too. But you know what? He spoke with Grant Williams, and he said, you just got to do two things if you want to play in this league. He said, one, you got to accept a role. And he said, my role is playing defense and knocking down the corner three when I need to shoot it. But he changed his mindset. And I tell guys all the time, I mean, he was a guy that wanted to score every time he got the ball, where he is totally now a guy that's the ultimate team player. And he's always been about one thing, though, winning. Winning was always the most important thing to him.
That's an amazing response to me. Rick Barnes joining us. And, you know, my big takeaway from that, Rick, two things. One, mindset, right? Everything starts mm-hmm. with a guy's mindset no matter what. And number two, that point that he made when he first came in, that people were saying, and that he was in the North Carolina area. Any one of these big schools could have had him, but they didn't want him because he was overweight. He wasn't tall enough. But what you knew about him was he just won. He always won. How do you identify that? And what separates a guy who always wins from others who think they work hard and would consider themselves winners?
Well, that's a great question, because I tell you what, that's the hardest thing to figure out. Like, you, again, I can throw Grant Williams in there. Grant Williams from Charlotte, North Carolina, not one ACC team offered him either. But when I saw Grant Williams, again, overweight, you could tell he had a good feel, but one day I'm watching him and I see him spin baseline and go up and dunk the ball for the first time. It looked like he put his elbow on the rim, which everybody said he's too small, he plays below the rim. And so my thought when I saw him was, hey, if he's got that in him, we just got to get it out of him more consistently. And that's why when you're out recruiting, you're watching guys, you might see him do one thing, and the question is, why don't they do it more? In most situations, they haven't been asked to do it more, or either they're not in shape where they can do it more. And so when you're evaluating those guys and you try to spend as much time with them as you can to talk to them and just totally generate the conversation to talk about, hey, are you willing to work? Because, you know, you are overweight. I mean, when you're recruiting a guy and you want him, it's hard to tell him, hey, you're lazy, you don't play hard enough. And I will tell you this, my good friend at Davidson College, Bob McKillop, told Grant Williams that. He said, we're not going to recruit you at Davidson because you're overweight and you don't work hard. And when I sit down with him, you know, I said to him, I said, how does it make you feel when somebody's honest with you like that? Because I said, I'm going to be honest with you like that. And he just looked at me and said, well, he's right. And so when you got someone that can be honest with themselves, that's when you know you got a chance to maybe get something out of people more than they might think they have given.
Rick Barnes joining us. Well said. So, Rick, as you mentioned, the program had to pause activities back in November. There were a number of positive tests. I mean, it's so challenging. It's so different. Even you had a positive test. What was it like to go through all of that in that period yourself and with your team?
Well, you know, when mine popped up, that's when we had our you know, it was literally 3 days before the open of the season. And what was really hard for us is watching college basketball get going. And after going through the fall, you know, everybody's itching, ready to play. And then knowing that we're going to end up playing 10, 15 days later, whatever it came out to be, was really hard. And, but as I was going through it, I had a number of people reach out, one of them being Tom Izzo. Tom had been through it, and, you know, he had told me what he had gone through with it. And my first couple of days, it wasn't so bad for me. And he told me, he said, be careful around that sixth, seventh, eighth day. And to be quite honest, Jim, that's when it jumped on me to a point that it was probably, honestly, looking back, it was probably a little bit worse than I wanted to say it was. And I do think this, I really do think there's something to be said about COVID fatigue. I think that we're watching some players that have been good players that are struggling, that's had the virus. I think that, and I'm glad Jason Tatum came out and talked about that, because even though you get yourself going, there's some difference to it once you go through it. But it was a tough time for all of us here. And, you know, right now we're testing 3 times a week, and not everyone obviously has tested, you know, positive for the virus. So it's scary every time you go in those 3 days hoping that test is going to come back negative.
By the way, it's really scary. It's very scary. And, Rick, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts and being candid about that, because it is a scary thing for sure. He's the head basketball coach at Tennessee, sixth season there. I want to reiterate, Rick, great to hear your voice. Great to have you back on the show. It had been too long. Good to talk to you. Good luck against Vanderbilt, and it's always good to get caught up. Rick, thanks so much.
Thanks. Appreciate you. Talk to you
later. Appreciate you, Rick, always. Rick Barnes, the damn good coach. Really good coach. I was just thinking how long it had been since he had been on the program, or I'd run him down. Longer than should have been. So good to reconnect with him. Tennessee's 15-6. They're 25 in the AP poll, and they've got another big one coming up against Vanderbilt on Wednesday night, as mentioned. Still ahead, KJ Wright, linebacker for the Seahawks, coming up next. Kenny Moore, also in hour number 3. We're coming right back. Listen, phone lines are open, so you never know when the interview might come or might not come. There might be a window. Take your shot. I might get you up here quickly. 1-800-636-8686. And Seahawks linebacker KJ Wright, top of the hour.